Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour, an editorial review, just go to our webpage, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the science behind the 6 days of creation when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell is one of the pillars of modern geology. Lyell published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people that believe Lyell's Principles of Geology don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that you observe today back through time indefinitely. That way, catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, let's listen to this. Niagara Falls. This famous waterfall is a magnificent example of a geologic clock that reveals a very young Earth, because the rim of the falls is wearing back at a known rate every year. Geologists recognize that it has only taken about 5,000 years or less for Niagara Falls to erode from its original precipice. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Do you remember that story? Wasn't that 65 million years ago? Now, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudoscientific lies, and it's just one part or one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science. And that's one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. I conduct that twice a year. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's free of charge. It doesn't cost you anything to find out. If you don't like it, leave it lay. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And the number to call to order yours is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about deception, and then I showed you that evolution is a lie. And then I showed you a couple of more proofs from science that the chapters 1 and 2 of Genesis are 100% true, accurate, and correct. That's my thesis. That's my purpose here, is to show you that Genesis 1 is true, accurate, and correct, and evolution is a lying masquerade. Now, I'm not opposed to people that believe in evolution. I mean, after all, you're entitled to believe what you want to believe. And if you want to believe in Catholicism or Mohammedism or Buddhism or evolution or Lilliputia or the Earth is flat, you know, be my guest. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But for my part, I kind of like to know, well, what's the truth of the matter? And I went to public school and they told me about evolution. I believed it because why shouldn't I? After all, it's what the book said. And why would my teachers and my parents lie to me? Why would my parents send me to an institution and have them tell me these stories, and then the stories turn out not to be true? So I showed you a little something yesterday that we learn here in law school. When you go to law school, they're going to put you through a course on cross-examination. And you're going to be given a book. There's more than one. But one of the books that you're going to be given on cross-examination in law school is Wellman on cross-examination. Well, when we get to Wellman on cross-examination, there's a story in there about Professor Swift. And clear back in 1918, he discovered that 25% of everything that comes out of everybody's mouth, 24/7, is false. Got that? And that's a shocker. It's a shocker, and I'm going to demonstrate that to you, and I'll show you what your reaction's going to be. And so every lawyer and every judge knows that eyewitness testimony is the least reliable form of evidence that you can introduce in court. Eyewitness testimony is the least reliable. You want me to repeat that again? The least reliable source of evidence in a court case is eyewitness testimony. All right, now here's the way this game is played. What they do today is they'll take two video cameras out and they'll set them up in two different locations. And then they'll take you and they'll set you down at a table with a pen and paper, and you can take all the notes you want. And then what we want to do is test your ability to observe and then report what it is that you observe. We're going to depose you after this event transpired. So the one that I saw was that there was two families. These two families are out picnicking and water skiing. And they've got a boat, and the boat's got a motor on it, and the boat's pulling these people, and there's men and women and children running around, and all of these things are going on. And when you watch this for 60 minutes, you watch this event for 60 minutes, they ask you 100 questions. And at the end of the 60 minutes and the 100 questions, you answer the 100 questions, and then they'll grade you. For instance, some of the questions worked out like this. They'd say, what color was the boat? Okay, we're going to test your powers of observation. For an hour, you've been watching these people ski on this boat. And now they ask you the question, well, what color was the boat? Was it blue and white, black and white, red and green? And so they don't give you multiple choice now. See, they don't say, well, was the boat white, was the boat green, was the boat red? They don't tell you the answer. And that's the way it is in court. See, when you go to court as a witness and you're sitting on the witness stand, the attorney doesn't come up to you and says, well, now, did you see the man shoot the victim, stab the victim, strangle the victim, or poison the victim? I mean, you're a witness, so we're here to find out, well, what do you know? And so they ask you what color the boat was. Well, you're supposed to be able to say, well, the boat was blue and white. So you'll write down, well, here's what I think the color of the boat was. They'll say, well, what was the engine in the boat? What was the make? What was the brand? Well, you know, when you see a boat, it's a Evinrude or a Johnson or Mercury or something like that, you know. And so, well, was it a Mercury 65 or, you know, what was the brand? I say, well, what was the motor? Or they'll ask you, was it an inboard or an outboard? And if you say it was an outboard, then they ask the question, well, what was the brand of the motor? And what was the horsepower? You know, if it said Mercury 65 on there, well, then did you observe that it was a Mercury 65 or a Johnson 80, or what did you see? Now say, well, how many women did you observe? How many children did you observe? How many boys, how many girls, how many men? Were they slalom skiing, or were they using two skis, or, you know? So when you get all through answering these 100 questions, they'll come back and grade your paper, and they'll say, you're wrong on this. The boat wasn't blue and white. It was black and white. It wasn't an Evinrude 65. It was a Mercury inboard. And there was three women there, not two, and so on down the line. And you'll get real mad. In fact, when you answer these questions and you see these answers, you'll say, I know what I saw, and I know what was there. And that's what an eyewitness does. See, you actually believe the lies that you're telling people, and that's the way lies come down. You see, you either lie and you know that you're lying, or you lie and you actually believe the lie that you're telling somebody. You yourself are deceived. You believe what it is that you're telling somebody else. So we call this constructive fraud, actual or constructive fraud. It's an actual fraud if you lie to somebody and know you're lying to them and you're doing it with a motive. It's constructive fraud if you're lying to somebody and you actually believe the lie yourself. Most people practice constructive fraud. They actually are lying to people, but they really believe the lies themselves. So when somebody is selling evolution to you, they actually believe the lies that they're telling you. Now, in some cases, that's not true. For instance, Dr. Hovind, I mentioned him to you last time, remember drdino.com, he told a story on the lies that are in your textbook. Back in 1874, they discovered that comparative embryology, the schematic that was written up, is still being used today, well, as recently as 1999 in the textbooks, and it was discovered to be a fraud. It was written in 1869, discovered to be a fraud. The author of it admitted that he lied. In 1874, it's been used ever since from that day to this, at least as recently in textbooks being used in your classroom. And I remember the textbooks myself because they showed the picture of a dog and a human embryo as it develops. And they say, look, see, you know, humans came from dogs because, you know, the embryos are very similar in their developmental stages. And that's a lie because it was admitted to being a lie. Piltdown Man was another lie. And Dr. Hovind goes through this and he tells you about these lies that are in the textbooks. Now, it isn't that these people don't know that they're lying. See, these people are actual liars. The textbook's writers, they know that Piltdown Man is a hoax. Now, they don't put Piltdown Man in anymore because everybody else knows it's a hoax. But when it comes to comparative embryology, not very many people know about that hoax because it was exposed back in 1874, so you haven't heard about that lie. Now, if you were a scientist, you'd know that that was a lie, but scientists all believe in evolution anyway, and they condone the lie because it helps them with the justification of their religion. Evolution's a religion. So, evolution is unscientific. Now, I'm going to show you these unscientific aspects of evolution. And then let's ask ourselves a question. Do we really want to believe this? Let's take a look here. The sun is shrinking. I mentioned this yesterday on the program. I said, now listen to this. A Newswire report made this surprising statement. Now, this was made March 23rd, 1980. It was published by the Gannett newspapers. Came out of a Gannett paper. And it was probably reported in the Hearst newspapers and everybody else's because they pick it up on the wire services. Somebody writes this article, you know, in the New York Times, and somebody picks it up on the wire service and they reprint it all over the country. And every Sunday in the Sunday supplement, you're going to read an evolutionary story. I mean, every Sunday in the newspaper, there's a story on evolution. You have never picked up your Sunday supplement and read a story by Dr. Kent Hovind, or by Dr. Carl Baugh, or by Dr. Harry Rimmer, or anybody else, or Dr. Robert Gentry on creation. You've never heard anybody, you know, cite from the proceedings of the 1992 Twin Cities Creation Conference. You only get the propaganda that comes from the evolution mill. You don't get the other side of the coin. So, here's this newspaper article, and it says the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Now, the way this process works is the government puts out grants, and professors, doctors, you know, that work at these universities, they apply for these grants. And they say, well, my name is Dr. Gentry, and I'd like this $3 million grant so that I can study polonium halos in granite, and the government will give him the $3 million, and then he goes out and buys equipment, and he studies this, and he makes it his lifelong work and writes books about it and things like that and gets paid by taxpayer money. You're out here driving truck, and every week they take $50 out of your paycheck and send it to Dr. Gentry so that he can sit around the water cooler telling dirty stories to the secretaries and keeping cool in a nice air-conditioned office, spending your money studying these polonium halos. And if it isn't Dr. Gentry, it's Dr. So-and-so or Dr. So-and-so. You know, there's tens of thousands of these leeches sucking off the government trough. Well, here's one of them over here, and his thing in life is studying the sun. So he's got a telescope, and he looks at the sun, and he takes measurements, and he's probably got some very sophisticated equipment. And so over time, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by 0.1% per century. And scientists have been watching for over 100 years. So this isn't something new that just started under the Clinton administration. You know, it's been going on for 100 years. They've been throwing your money away like this forever. So for 100 years, they've been studying the sun, and they've been observing that the sun is burning up, shrinking at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Now, that's that every hour the sun is shrinking by 5 feet. So I'm sitting here with my Texas Instrument calculator, and I'm taking 5 times 24. That's 120 feet a day. I mean, did you know that the sun shrank 120 feet? Its diameter shrank 120 feet yesterday? I didn't know that. Okay. Well, you know, if you were waiting for little Georgie Gordon to give you this kind of a revelation in life, you know, hell's going to freeze over. And you're going to get your feet frozen in the ice before I find that out. So I'm just reporting to you what came off of the wire services that you read in your paper. This is evolution at its best. Now, that's 120 feet a day. Let's multiply that out times 365 days. My God, that's 43,800 feet per year. Now, there's 5,280 feet in a mile, and these guys might be off a little bit. So for, you know, practical purposes, let's just round this off to 1 mile a year. Now, the sun is about 750,000 miles in diameter. You know, just round it off. That's a big piece of real estate, 750,000 miles. Take an orange, and then put your fingers on two sides of the orange. See if you can hold it up there with two fingers. The distance between the tips of your two fingers is 750,000 miles. And in just 1 year, it's 749,999 miles. At the end of the second year, it's 749,998. Well, you know, in 1,000 years, it would be 749,000. Now, last time I looked, the sun was about 740,000 miles in diameter. I think that's what I saw. That's pretty big. But hey, listen, let's do a little more arithmetic here. If the sun is shrinking 0.1% for every 100 years, that totals 1% every 1,000. So in 1,000 years, it would be 1%. So if the sun existed 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. Okay, now this is uniformitarianism. And remember that the guy that discovered uniformitarianism is a fellow by the name of James Hutton. James Hutton. Back about 1750, he was an anti-God, anti-Bible, pro-evolution kind of guy, just our kind of guy, you know, good old boy. And he said, this God is a bunch of crap, and I'm going to come up with uniformitarianism. Now, uniformitarianism is the heart and soul of evolution. What you see going on today, when you see the Grand Canyon and you look at that river going through there, that river carved all that canyon out of there. And that's true, it did, no doubt about it. But they tell you that it took millions of years for that to happen, and the answer to that is, it's like I told you with this polonium, how long did it take God to make that granite? It was 164 milliseconds. 0.000164 seconds. That's 164 milliseconds. That's how long it took. That's what we tested. That's what Dr. Gentry told us. That's the arithmetic. That's the math of it. You can duplicate that. That's an experiment. That's real science. That's not speculation. That's not philosophy. Evolution is speculation and philosophy. And they mix evolution, that is philosophy, with science, and then they call evolution science. Evolution is religion. And they used to have the Christian religion mixed up with science in our public schools, and the evolutionists didn't like that, so they worked real hard, and they got religion, Christianity, thrown out of the public schools and replaced Christian religion with evolution religion. So you got evolutionary philosophy teaching you now this evolutionary religious ideology in your schools. It's the anti-God, you know, it's their theory, their religious dogma. Well, anyway, this guy, Hutton, comes up with uniformitarianism. Now, what they tell us is that what you see today going on is what's been going on for billions and billions of years. Okay, well, let's follow that through. If that's true, if Hutton is telling us the truth, and uniformitarianism is the rule, and if the Earth is 4 billion years old, then the sun has to have been up there working for 4 billion years, right? That's the story. I didn't make this story up. I'm just reporting the story. Uniformitarianism says that what you see going on today has been going on forever, and that the Earth is 4 billion years old from the time of the Big Bang. Actually, the Earth has to be way older than 4 billion years old, boys and girls, because the Hubble telescope is looking out there now. They can see 12.5 billion light years out there, and they're going to build another one that looks out 25 billion. When I was a kid, it was 2 billion. Then they upped it to 4. And 4 isn't enough. It's got to be at least 12.5. I'm just telling you their story. This is their story in their words. They write it in their textbooks. And then Dr. Hovind goes through the textbooks and says, hey, listen, these are lies. Let me show you these lies. And these lies are exposed every now and again. But see, when you're reading the textbook, they don't say, well, this is a lie which was exposed back in 1948 called Piltdown Man. And this is a lie which was exposed back in 1864 called Comparative Embryology. And, hey, this is a lie called the Grand Canyon being carved by the Colorado River because the Kaibab uplift is 4,000 feet higher than the entrance of the river into the canyon. I mean, they don't tell you in the textbook that these are lies. I mean, how in the hell could we get you to believe a lie if we exposed ourselves and told you, well, that's a lie? I mean, come on, guys, let's grow up and get real. George Bush doesn't say, well, of course I knew that from the beginning of my administration I planned to attack Iraq. He has to come up with a plausible, well, gosh, it was only after the 9/11 attacks that I said, well, gee, maybe we should think about Iraq. See what's going on here? You find out about the lies after the fact. Most people can't put the lies together with the truth. So let's see if we can do that here. So here's the sun story. The sun is shrinking by 5 feet an hour. That's scientific. Hell, anybody can measure that. You can look at the data over the last 100 years. That's real science. 5 feet an hour. I didn't know that. Thank God we spent our tax dollars to find out that the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. When I was a kid, they said the sun isn't consuming itself because it's got this oscillation. I didn't quite understand it, but it's made out of helium and hydrogen. And the story went, you know, I'm 10, 12, 14 years old. And the story went, the hydrogen converts to helium and the helium converts back to hydrogen. And this is a thermonuclear reaction and it doesn't consume very much fuel and it burns for millions and millions of years. Jesus, that was just back in the 1950s when they told me that lie. Now, as recently as 1980, this is March 23rd, 1980, 25 years ago, we find out that, gee, now the facts are in, it's being consumed at 5 feet an hour. Okay, well, shit, now we can do something with that. You take 5 feet an hour, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% a century, it totals 1% per millennium. So if the sun existed 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. Okay. Now the sun, write this down. Get your pencil out here. Remember, sharpened on both ends. Write 750 down there. Now put another 750 underneath it. And if you don't have your famous Texas Instrument calculator, you have to do this manually. That's 0, 0. And 5 and 5 is 10. 7, 7 is 14. 1 is 15. That would be 1,500. That's 1,500,000 miles in diameter. Okay, so you count back 100,000 years, and the sun would have been 1,500,000 miles in diameter, being consumed at the rate of 5 feet an hour, about 1 mile every year. So in 100,000 years, you know, see what happens? And it's, you know, all right, now, let's read the next sentence here. It tells us, if the sun existed 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter, and only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Well, as far as researchers can tell, this rate has been going on since the origin of the sun, because they all believe in James Hutton's uniformitarian religious ideology. They believe it. It's an article of faith. You know, if we were in court, some witty lawyer would ask the witness, how do you know that the sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour? And the scientist would say, because we've been measuring it. And he'd ask some more questions about the measurements to verify the fact that these measurements are scientific, verifiable, and can be duplicated by anybody else. And then they would do the arithmetic, and they'd say, well, if the sun only existed 100,000 years ago, wouldn't it then, sir, be double its present size? And a little work on your Texas Instrument machine would tell you, yep, that's about true. Okay, now let's go back 20 million years ago. How big would the sun be? Using this uniformitarianism as our model, we would go back 100,000 times. It'd be 100,000 more miles. And then, of course, as you're adding this onto the ball, it gets bigger and bigger exponentially. And we would come up to the number 93 million miles in diameter. Now, when the sun is 93 million miles in diameter, there's probably some suns out there that are that big. They tell us there's some big, big pieces of real estate out there. Well, you see, the circuit of the Earth is 93 million miles to the sun. So now if you needed to travel from here to the sun, it would take you at the speed of light about 8 or 9 minutes, 186,000 miles a second. So you jump on your rocket ship and you're going to speed off to the sun. It takes you about 10 minutes to get there. Now that's 93 million miles. Now wait a minute. 65 million years ago. Write these numbers down, boys and girls. 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs died out. 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter and was touching the Earth. Hell, I'm just using evolution numbers. I didn't dream these numbers up. I'm just giving you the facts that come out of the books. Now, you know, thinking people don't go to church. They don't go to church because the religious people who go to church don't have any basis for their beliefs. They don't believe Genesis 1. And the preachers don't make any bones about it. They tell you plainly it's unscientific. Genesis 1 is a lie. And then they'll go to Noah's flood and they'll say, well, that's lie number 2. And so thinking people say, well, why would I want to go to church and listen to some guy prattle on about the Bible, which he himself admits is a lie? Now, Jesus never made any such admissions. Jesus said in Matthew 4:4 that man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. When he made that statement in Matthew 4:4, he was quoting that statement from Moses, who originally made that statement in Deuteronomy 8:3. So it's a direct quotation from Moses. Now, when he made that statement, this is Jesus. Now, when he made that statement, not one word of the New Testament had yet been written down. The Apostle Paul hadn't even been converted yet. John had not written the book of Revelation. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John had not written the Gospels yet. This is Matthew 4:4. This is early on in the ministry. Jesus isn't dead yet. He's still talking to people. And he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Boys and girls, the only words that had proceeded out of the mouth of God to that moment in time was the Old Testament. You know, Genesis 1. And then Jesus made another crazy statement over in Luke 6:46. He said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? So the preachers today tell you plainly that the Bible is filled with errors, particularly scientific errors. Jesus said that's not true. Jesus said that all Scripture is given by inspiration of God. Now, he was probably lying when he said that, but that's what he said. He said, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He said, no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God. Paul didn't think of a word to say in the Scripture. He wrote down what he was inspired to write down. So did Moses and everybody else. Well, of course, if the Bible is true. Now, Hutton and Lyell and Darwin and all of the preachers, or at least most, not all, but you know, most of the preachers in America tell you, oh, the Bible's just full of lies and errors. So I can readily understand why anybody that's got half a brain would stay the hell away from church. That's a crazy concept. Because if evolution is true, then there is no God. And if there is no God, what's all this religious crap all about? Who wants to spend his time feeding the hungry maw of churchianity and religion that has an insatiable and unending desire for more and more money. Now, on the other hand, if, in fact, the Bible is true, accurate, and correct, well, then how come you religious guys out there don't obey Jesus when he says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord? Why do you call Jesus Lord and do not those things which he tells you to do? Like obey every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." All right, now with that out of the way, can you see the lie in this science? Now, it isn't that the science is lying, because science is knowledge. But the evolutionists are lying to us when they tell us that the sun is billions of years old. Because 20 million years ago, the sun would have been 93 million miles in diameter, and they told us 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs died out. My God, boys and girls, if the sun was going to be 93 million miles in diameter in 20 million years, it would be more than double that in 40 million years and more than double that in 60 million years. There weren't any dinosaurs on planet Earth if the sun was 93 million miles in diameter. I mean, come on, guys. Let's grow up and get real, shall we? I know it's a wild new concept, but let's think about it. All right, I got to give you a reminder. We're at the halfway point in the program, and I have to tell you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. And keep in mind that the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log and schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate, and most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the science behind the 6 days of creation. I contend that it isn't enough to bash the evolutionists, that we need to prove whether or not Genesis chapter 1 is true, accurate, and correct. So in the second program in this series, I showed you that mathematically, the 6 days of creation are correct. And I took that from a paper written by, it's on page 23 here, written by Mr. Gerardus D. Bow, Ph.D. He's a doctor. And it comes from the proceedings. This was a Twin Cities Creation Conference, 1992, sponsored by the Twin Cities Creation Science Association, the Genesis Institute, Northwestern College, assisted by the Creation Health Foundation. This was a research paper that he presented to his peers. If there was something wrong with it, they would have said, "Hey, you dummy, can't you add? Can't you subtract?" That's what I'm doing here. I'm going to give you a couple of these examples from a book that I got called Evolution from Dr. Carl Baugh, and I'll tell you a bit more about Dr. Baugh here in a minute. He also puts out Creation. He's got a set of tapes here called Creation in Symphony. In fact, while I'm at it, I'll just tell you the story. This guy, Dr. Carl Baugh, has a museum down in Glen Rose, Texas. If you'd like to take a look here, there's a phone number, 214-458-9874. That's Take One Video and Post, Carrollton, Texas. It's produced and distributed by Take One Video and Post, Carrollton, Texas, CARROLLTON, Texas, TX, 214-458-9874. And this Dr. Baugh, who runs this museum down in Glen Rose, Texas, put out a series of tapes called Creation and Symphony. Now, he's not an evolution basher. He is a creation promoter. So he takes the science, like Dr. Robert Gentry, and reports these scientific facts which prove that the days of creation were true, accurate, and correct. But he gets more technical than that. I mean, this guy's a real scientist. And he has a hyperbaric chamber down there that they're experimenting with. And he'll tell you the story about the cherry tree of this Japanese doctor who grew a cherry tree. It's actually just a little cherry tomato plant that grew 40 feet tall in a hyperbaric chamber, using two atmospheres and a little science to go along with it, to duplicate the conditions on planet Earth during the period from the creation up to the flood, with the collapse of the canopy and all that kind of thing. So it's really an interesting set of tapes. Now, I'm going to promote that because this guy, Carl Baugh, has really been bashed. And one day, a listener sent me a website, and he said, "Did you know that Carl Baugh is a liar? Did you know that Carl Baugh is not a real doctor? That he got his PhD from a diploma mill? I didn't know that. My God, I was shocked. I was amazed. I was dumbfounded when I found out that my hero, Dr. Baugh, was a liar." Now, I showed you in the last program, the 25% of what comes out of every human being's mouth, all 6 billion of us around the world, is false. Now, the Bible says, "Let God be true, though every man be found a liar." So, I thought, my God, Carl Baugh is a liar. And I thought, well, that isn't too bad. George Gordon's a liar, so if I'm a liar, Carl Baugh ought to be a liar also. So, some guy said to me one time, he said, "Well, Gordon, you admit to being a liar?" And I said, "Yeah, don't you?" And he said, "No, I'm not a liar." And I said to this guy, he's sitting here in the classroom, and I said, "Have you ever told a lie in your entire life?" Well, he paused for a moment, and he thought about that, and he said, yes, I probably have told a lie at some time in the past. I said, "You look to be a fairly young man. You're in your 30s, and you probably won't die for another 30 or 40 years. Do you believe that it's possible that in the next 30 or 40 years you might tell one more lie before you die?" He paused for a minute, and he thought about that for a second, and he said, Yeah, I probably would tell one more lie before I die." And I said, "Let me ask you the third question here. In the recent past, you know, just in the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, have you told a lie, shaded the truth just a little bit?" He paused for a minute and he said, "Well, Yeah, maybe I have lied, you know, maybe I have shaded the truth a little bit in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I said, then out of your own mouth you admit that you're a liar, past, present, and future. Let me ask you the question again, son. Are you a liar? Well, you know, he thought about that for a second. He said, well, I never thought of it that way before. So that's fine. That's called constructive fraud. Now, here's the story on Carl Baugh. So I went to the webpage and I looked it up, and sure enough, it appears that Dr. Carl Baugh got his PhD from Pacific University, which is a diploma mill. Diploma mill. You've probably heard the word diploma mill because many public officials in Washington, D.C., people that work in the State Department, the CIA, and in the Defense Department, have gone to these diploma mills to get their doctorates and their master's degrees because they get higher paying jobs. You know, if you're a GS-15 working in the State Department and all of a sudden you come in with your PhD, you can get up to a higher level and get more money. And so that's been quite a scandal going on in Washington. And there's not just 4 or 5 doing this. I mean, there's tens of thousands that have done this. And I remember a guy came in here one time. His name was Dr. Robert Fox. Dr. Robert Fox. Very impressive fellow. And I asked him, I said, what did you do your doctoral thesis on? And he kind of smiled a little bit and he said, well, to be honest with you, I didn't do a doctoral thesis. I got my diploma from, and he named the school. And I said, oh, it's one of those diploma mills. And he said, well, yeah, that's one of them. Now, I've pointed out to you a number of times, did you know that Henry Ford only went to the 6th grade? He never had a PhD. And that Thomas Edison had 1,200 patents, went to the 3rd grade, never had a PhD. Jesus Christ of Nazareth went through his life, short though it was, 33 years, never had a PhD. I'm not sure why it is today that we believe that you have to have a doctorate, a PhD, or a college degree to know something. But it's in American society. I mean, if you don't have PhD after your name, you are a dunderhead. Well, hell, I don't deny that. I've never claimed to be very smart, and I don't have any letters after my name. I do know this, I'm not brain dead. I'm not brain dead, well, not yet. I'm able to look at this Niagara Falls, for instance. I'm able to look at the sun shrinking at 5 feet an hour and come to a conclusion. I can still use my Texas Instrument calculator. I can do 5 feet an hour times 24 hours in a day times 365 days in a year, and I can multiply that out, and I can figure out that if that story from evolution is true, then the other story that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago is a lie. Those dinosaurs died out a lot sooner, or you know, a lot less time than 65 million years ago. So I'm not quite sure which lies I want to believe here yet. I'm just uncovering some inconsistencies in the testimony. We'll come up with our verdict a little later. But anyway, getting back to Carl Baugh over here, I think it's really true. Carl Baugh is a damn liar. That Carl Baugh doesn't really have a PhD from a recognized university like Harvard or Cambridge or Princeton. Now, with that out of the way, so what? So what? An evolutionist can come in here and lie about comparative embryology, lie about Piltdown Man, lie about the Grand Canyon, admit that their numbers are inconsistent, their numbers are lies, and actually admit before their peer review committees that, yes, I lied about this comparative embryology program that I put out, but, you know, it's part of science. It's part of the program. What I was expecting was that somebody was going to expose Dr. Baugh as a liar and that the 6 days of creation were false and that his research into the 6 days of creation and his evolution bashing was a damn lie. So since they couldn't disprove his science, they attacked Dr. Baugh and his person that did the same thing to Kent Hovind. I think Kent Hovind got his PhD from the same diploma mill called Pacific University. And so, of course, the people at Harvard and Yale and Cambridge say, well, that's nothing but a damn diploma mill. Well, excuse me, isn't Harvard and Cambridge and Princeton diploma mills? Don't you go there and pay your money to get a piece of paper that says I'm real smart? I think that these people would be better served. I think that Dr. Hovind and Dr. Baugh would be better served if they followed Christ's example. He didn't go get a worldly PhD in jack squat. He just came with a message and said, hey, boys, gather around, listen up, let me tell you where the bear does it. Here's where the rubber meets the road. And he told his story and left the scene. And, of course, nobody believes Jesus because he's a damn liar. Well, I mean, after all, it's the only conclusion you can come to. And the religionists are the first ones to come right out into the forefront and say, we don't believe the Bible is true. We think it's filled with scientific inaccuracies and mistakes. We do not believe that the Bible is divinely inspired. We think it was written by a bunch of Bedouin, long-haired, bearded creeps that were traipsing around in the desert who didn't know their ass from a hot rock. Now, that's the bottom line. But come to church next Sunday and put your money in the offering plate and listen to my drivel as I tell you about some nonsense, if you can even call it nonsense, that you can listen to in church next Sunday. Now, Dr. Hovind, if that's the name, I'm gonna call him Dr. Hovind. I'm gonna call him Dr. Baugh. I mean, if that's what he wants to be called, if he wants to be a doctor, by God, let him be a doctor. I could be a doctor. If I want to be Dr. Gordon, I can be Dr. Gordon. But I just woke up one day and I decided, what in the hell do I want some man's accolades labeled on me? Why do I want to go pay my money to some jerk and have him pin this piece of paper on me and say, George Gordon's real smart? Jesus said, you'll know them by their fruits. Now, I would like to suggest that you take $100 of your money and send it to Glen Rose, Texas, to the Creation Evidences Museum. It's a $100 bill, to the Creation Evidences Museum of Glen Rose, Texas. I don't have a zip code here, but listen, Glen Rose, Texas is about it, like Isabella, Missouri. And when you put Carl Baugh, B-A-U-G-H, on that letter, it's like writing George Gordon, Isabella, Missouri. That's all you need. Nobody's going to make a mistake here at our post office. There's only 541 people that live in our zip code. And I'll guarantee you that our postmistress down here knows the names of every single person in this zip code. She knows us all. And as soon as she sees George Gordon on there, she'll say, oh, it goes in box 279. You know. And when you send this $100 bill down to Creation Evidences Museum in Glen Rose, Texas, and you tell Dr. Baugh that you want his symphony, Creation in Symphony, and he is going to give you the proof, the scientific proof, of the 6 days of creation. And Dr. Hovind, he's going to give you the lies of evolution. Now remember, this is going to cost you a $200 bill for these two sets of tapes. Now I spent my $200, and then I spent my money and got on the air, and I'm telling you where the bodies are buried here. So I'm going to tell you where the bodies are buried. So before you write me a letter and tell you, hey, these guys are a couple of liars, I'm going to tell you, partner, hey, dude, 25% of what comes out of your mouth is a lie. Dr. Baugh lied about or deceived us concerning his doctorate. He's not a liar. He told the truth. He's got a doctorate. He's a doctor. He just didn't tell you the whole truth that he didn't get his doctorate from Harvard. Harvard. He didn't get it from Harvard. See? George Gordon doesn't have a doctorate from anybody. This guy said to me, hey, you know that for $500, you too can get your doctorate and you can be a doctor. You'd be called Dr. Gordon. Now, I'd have a lot more credibility, wouldn't I? I could come on the air and say, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, your narrator tonight, Dr. George Gordon, speaking on the subject of the science behind the 6 days of creation, right after this. Okay, but I'm not a doctor, so I just come on here and say, well, let me tell you the story. Here's where the bodies are buried. And here's the guy that can tell you the answer to that riddle. Now listen, it's a $100 bill. I told you in the last program, you can't get laid for $100. Unless it's a snaggletooth slut from down on Skid Row, some wino, you know, that's a two-bagger that you'd puke and throw up if you actually saw her face. I mean, come on, guys. For $100, Carl Baugh is going to tell you where the bodies are buried. Now, there's a second little thing here on Carl Baugh. I think that's where I got the tape on Dr. Robert Gentry. I think that it was the Creation Evidences Museum. I got a bunch of stuff out of there. I went down there and actually visited the place. And I met Dr. Baugh. And I can tell you from my personal experience, you will know him by his fruit. That's what Jesus told you to measure him by. Not his doctorate. You'll know him by his fruit. And this guy has got more coming out of his lips in the first three sentences than all these preachers that you'll listen to in church will prattle on about for the rest of time. I mean, in three sentences, that guy will tell you more about the Bible, about creation and evolution and the proof of science in three sentences. Now listen, you voted for George Bush, and that jerk couldn't put two sentences together correctly in a paragraph. I mean, if that guy had to write a paragraph, you couldn't find two sentences in there that are put together correctly. Now, of course, he's not claiming to be a doctor, but he's president of the United States. So now when you write me or you call me and you tell me about Dr. Bob being a phony or Dr. Hovind being a phony over here, I'm telling you, from my own personal observation, you'll know them by their fruits, not by their fancy words. And when people cannot refute their arguments, cannot refute their science, they attack their person, attack the messenger. I have that happen here every once in a while. Somebody will write me a letter and say, you know, you ain't nothing but a damn phony. I never told you I was the genuine article. I said, I'm a crummy reporter. I just came here to tell you this is where it's at. If you like it, buy it. If you don't like it, leave it lay. Turn the dial. That's the best part of radio. If you don't like it, turn the dial. All right, now I gave you the story here on evolution is unscientific. And I mean, it's as phony as a $3 bill. Gave you that piece of information. I'll give you another quickie. Remember the story on Niagara Falls? Well, Niagara Falls wears back about 3 feet a year. I mean, you can go out there to Niagara Falls and you can put up a camera and you can take a picture and just leave it on the tripod. They've been doing this for years and years. And 3 years from now, that lip of the fall is going to wear back 3 feet. And they've been watching this, you know, for years and years and years. Using Hutton and Lyell's uniformitarian theory, all they got to do is add 3 feet to it every year and just, you know, just travel on down here 10 miles. And what they find is that it's less than 10,000 years. Less than 10,000 years. We're not talking about millions and billions of years, boys and girls. We're talking about thousands of years, and that's what the Bible's talking about. Thousands of years, and that's what Carl Baugh's talking about. Thousands of years, and that's what Ken Hovind's talking about. Thousands of years. That's what Dr. Robert Gentry is talking about. That's what the creationist scenario for the origin of the universe is talking about. That's what the proceedings of the Twin Cities Creation Conference is all about. And by the way, on that Twin Cities Creation Conference, I bought this book down at Glen Rose, Texas. I'm just going to flip through here. It's about 300 pages in the book, 280. And there's over 100 scientific papers that were presented at the Twin Cities Conference, and I read two of them to you so far. I'm going to cover a third one. We'll take a look at cavitation. tomorrow night. Cavitation. Well, that's a wild topic. How did the Grand Canyon get carved out? It's called cavitation. How long did God take to create the granite on planet Earth? 164 milliseconds. That's how long it took. And that's science. And that's demonstrable. And that can be proven. And that can be done by you in your own laboratory. And you can get the paper from Dr. Gentry. And you can get the information from Creation and Symphony, and that's the Creation Evidences Museum of Glen Rose, Texas. That's all you need. You just put it down there, and you could tell Dr. Baugh that George Gordon sent you. Not that it's going to do you any good. He's not going to give you a discount. Probably doesn't remember me and couldn't care less anyway. And you better not tell Dr. Hovind that George Gordon sent you, because he probably holds your mail up for 3 weeks. I don't know that that's true, but... You know, I'm not endeared by Christians, and I'm not endeared by religious people at all. I remember one time I had a student come in here to class, and he's a Baptist guy from Oregon. In fact, he was a policeman from Oregon. He came out here and went to school, and he went down here, a two-week school, you know, so he went down to the local Baptist church, and over here in Isabella, and while they were in church, he just happened to mention my name, and there was something going on here, I kind of forget what it was, and he said that he would like the people in the church to remember George Gordon because there was some problem over here and he needed our prayers. And the preacher said, there will be no prayers in this church for George Gordon. Nah, that's all right. I'm not opposed to the local Baptist here or that local Baptist preacher. I didn't need that preacher's prayers. I never asked for them. I just wanted to tell you that I'm about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. AIDS at an office Christmas party. That's about how popular I am here in religious circles. So don't run around and bandy my name about when you're talking to your preacher over here, because Jesus never had a good word for a preacher. Jesus never had a good word for a banker, and Jesus never had a good word for a lawyer. Those are three professions that if you were engaged in those three criminal activities, preaching, lawyering, or banking, you ought to think about retirement, early retirement. I would suggest you take early retirement from those three professions. Take a look at that in Luke chapter 11, verses 37 through 54, and you'll see what Jesus thought about preachers. I got about the same opinion of them. Now, I think Karl Baugh is a little bit smarter than that, and I don't think he's a preacher. Now, I may be wrong, but Hovind is a preacher, and maybe there's some hope for him yet. And he's a pretty nice-looking guy. I'm looking at his picture right here. He's a pretty good-looking guy, and he's a little humorous, and he's got a hell of a story to tell, and for $100, boys and girls, he's going to tell you a whole lot more than I can over the air in 4 or 5 hours. Now listen, both of these programs, these are not short programs. This Hovind program, I think, is 15 hours. And this Creation and Symphony, Creation and Symphony by Karl Baugh, I think is, it's three tapes. I think they're about 4 hours each. So, I mean, we're talking about 12 hours. We're talking about some serious science here. I mean, serious science. Not the kind of pablum that you got in college. Not the kind of pablum that you got from evolutionary philosophy. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to cut it off right here. We'll be back with cavitation tomorrow night. Be sure you tune in. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, if you'd like to order it, you don't have to, but if you want one, they're free. And it's the place to start, and you can call by ordering, or you can order by calling, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the website, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Thanks for listening, and... good night, friends.